The buzzer may court on its way.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, two guys that picked the Final Four absolutely perfectly because we are gurus to no end. And both of us are in San Antonio, but we're in different areas of San Antonio. And we're going to look at last night's national championship game, but our special March Madness recap of the national championship is brought to you by Google Cloud Platform. Nothing better than Google Cloud Platform. You know what I mean? D squared. I mean, it doesn't get any better.
Seth, I learned so much. Who knows that the guy wearing number one hits most buzzer beaters. Seniors hit most You know, we live in an information age, Seth, and I want info, and Google Cloud gives me info.
Doesn't get any better. Now, speaking of info, last night, game starts up. I know, go blue or whatever they say on the Riverwalk, because every person from Michigan had to.
Wow.
While you were buying me Tito's and tonic and eating guac and chips. But besides that, I mean, game starts, and it kind of starts, and you look and say, like, Michigan's up and into them. They're kind of making the reversal pass a little hard. They're pushing them out a step further. Michigan's up seven. Life is good. Game plan's working. Mo Wagner, first possession of the game, bang, right into the low block. You know, they make a couple of shots. He has nine. I think he has 9 points at the first TV timeout. And you're going, maybe Villanova's vulnerable. And then enters Dante DiVincenzo. And when Dante DiVincenzo comes in, he goes, bang, bang, makes a couple threes, which opens up the thing a little bit. All of a sudden now, Villanova's driving it to the rack, and Dante's laying it in on people, dunking people, back-cutting people. The defense gets excited. All of a sudden, they're denying Mo Wagner the ball a little bit, helping off of Simpson, and it was over. I mean, what was your take on how quickly that thing turned, and how big do you think Jalen Brunson's three at the end of the half was?
Well, I thought at the end of the half, Brunson's three was big. But looking at the second half, I mean, really, Michigan never I hate to say it, but I just felt like Michigan was never going to make a run, and they didn't. Even though, you know, end of the half, John Beilein had to take Abdul Rahman out. And I felt Abdul Rahman in the first half was the only guy really going after Mo's little spurt. I'm not sure the three – obviously, it was big. Obviously, it helped. I'm not saying it didn't. But Seth, I think this is just one of those games where they were just better, you know. And one of the things that I thought was interesting, and it was second half, kind of middle, maybe early second half, kind of before maybe the 10-minute mark. Jordan Poole goes down, looks like he has transition. Three guys, you know, sprinting back for Villanova. They force Poole to take a wild shot, misses, and Seth, I swear to God. Boom, boom, wing three, Mikhail Bridges, whap. It was like my wife looked at me and she goes, well, that was easy. You know, and it just, the way they play, the way they pass it, the confidence with which they shoot. I'm with you, though, Seth. Honestly, God, I'm in a group text, Tirico and our producer, Scotty Johnson, Bart Fox, Allison Williams is part of it. And I'm like, man, wait a second. Michigan might be better here early in the game. And then, Nanook. And Seth, DiVincenzo was huge. Spellman couldn't make nothing. But, you know, we saw this earlier in the tournament with DiVincenzo. And if it wasn't DiVincenzo, he was a first-half guy in one game. It was the second half. Hey, look, I know we're not supposed to say we have any great teams in college basketball, but that team last night – and that team throughout the tournament ranks with the great teams in college basketball when it's all said and done, winning every game by double digits, Seth. Let me ask you, do you think they're a great team?
Oh, I think they're a great team. I think they're great, and you know team. What? They are a great team, and they epitomize team. Because, I mean, like, Eric Pascal, the game before, goes, what, 10 for 11, 20, 24 points. Dante DiVincenzo had 18 in the first half, a couple in the second game of the tournament. What he did last night, I mean, Phil Booth was the most outstanding player of their last national championship, you know, a returning guy and a team with shared experiences. And I know people are tired of hearing me say this, but one McDonald's All-American played in that game last night. One.
Yeah.
Right? The average age or experience of the players in the game last night was 3 years on campus. 3 years on campus. Villanova played like a team that was a team that had trust and really didn't care. And you're listening to their post game, and I'm sure you were reveling on the Riverwalk, so you probably didn't hear some of it. But every guy that was interviewed talked about two things. Villanova basketball, like it was a cult. Like, you know what? We just played Villanova basketball. And to define that, it's playing hard, playing together, trusting each other, having a common goal, and everyone doing what they do to their best of their ability. And then the other thing that the upperclassmen or the guys that were at the table said was, the one thing about Coach Wright is when he brings guys in, he brings guys in that will buy in, but it's the upperclassmen's responsibility to teach them what Villanova basketball is, to make sure that they make the right decisions on and off the court, that they carry themselves the way you're supposed to at Villanova. And I mean, like, it was like a recruiting message, but it was real. You could hear Jalen Brunson say, well, as a freshman, I really didn't get it. But Josh and those guys explained it to me. And now it's my responsibility to pass it down. And Mikal Bridges saying, you know, when I was a freshman and I redshirted, you know, I didn't really understand what Villanova basketball was. But we got high character guys that work hard, that get it, that don't want to embarrass the program, that do the right thing. And it was really interesting. And it just proves when you see that championship game, yeah, one and guns are great and great players. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And they're all going to get drafted early in the NBA draft. But I'll tell you, there's something to be said about being invested in a program, in a culture, in each other. And that's what Villanova was yesterday, and that's how they had this magical season, and that's why they're a great team, in my opinion.
Well, I think that's why the two teams that played in the championship game played in the championship game. I mean, I really do, because they have similar responsibilities inside their program. They look, to me, you can have all that culture, you can have great culture and still get your brains beat out if you don't have good enough players. And I give Jay Wright and his staff credit because, let's be honest, talent corrupts, right? We say that all, you know, I say it all the time. Like, you see a guy with talent and you think, well, I'm going to make him this, or I'm going to, you know, in our program, he'll be this. Well, that gets you fired a lot of times, and I did it. I'll be honest with you. I totally did it at Bowling Green. I'm like, man, we're right there. So I took a few chances on a couple of kids that weren't bad kids. They just didn't want to be coached. And Jay Wright and John Beilein know what they're looking for in a player. They don't care what he's ranked. They don't care who he's supposed to be. And when I say what they're looking for in a player, I'm including the character of the player. I'm including the desire to be coached, the desire to listen. And honest to goodness, I really don't see that changing. Now, there are people that will say, and I'm going to ask you this, Seth. Well, if Jalen Brunson, I saw this morning, if Jalen Brunson had gone somewhere else, we would be talking about them being national champions. Do you agree with that? Is it? Can we make too much of a culture and not enough of, hey, look, Jalen Brunson was headed to Temple. His dad was going to be an assistant coach, and something happened with the father, and next thing you know, he's at Villanova. Do we make too much of the culture and not enough about, hey, this kid's damn good?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think, you know, like good players without good culture doesn't win, and good culture without good players doesn't win.
But can the player make the culture? Like I'm going way back.
I think the players have to make the culture. I think the players have to make the culture because let's say what you don't have culture unless the players make it. And I think what they've done is they've created this, this belief that this is who we are. And I mean, like everything Jay does, and I spent so much time up there when the famous Jackie G was
Sure. Rolled
to Villanova, and I sat in the staff meetings, I sat in their film sessions in the back. I saw their attitude board. I saw how important it was for guys to get, you know, their attitude board has nothing to do with points. It has nothing to do with really things that most fans would look and evaluate a game. It has to do with intangibles. It has to do with extra passes and first to the floor and early help and high hands and being the right at the right place for your teammate so your teammate can do his job. And I really believe that Jay has created this environment. It's almost I used to call North Carolina the firm. All right, because I mean that's kind of it's almost I would say almost a sterile environment in some ways. This is in a lot of ways just who they are. Now look, I mean they're going to have pros. They have four pros on their team. Those guys are all weren't pros coming in, but they've bought in. Like Mikal Bridges, I mean he's bought in. He's worked at his game. He's worked at his body. He's gotten better. That's kind of the Villanova way. Now, it's like that other places, but I think they legitimately have. And Jay Wright, remember, he had a 13-19 season where he recruited, after they went to their first Final Four, they recruited big-time, big-name, high-roller-type guys. They didn't buy in. And they had, their own agenda as opposed to the team agenda. And it just didn't work. Not that they were bad guys. They were good guys. It just, when you have those one-and-done guys, towards the end of the season, do they have both feet in? Where's the static that's around them? How many people are pulling at them? Where are their priorities? This team here, I think their priorities were right on the money. Now, I'm going to ask you another question because you brought it up about Michigan and Villanova. 7,000 students, 47,000 students, pretty different. Catholic Research University, founded by the Augustine Fathers. A large public state research university. Jay Wright in his tailored suits, John Beilein looking like Columbo. All right? Yet, you know what? Those two guys are about as similar as people don't realize how similar those two programs and those two coaches are. Don't you agree?
Oh, I totally agree. The clothes don't make the man, damn it. The clothes don't make the man.
We know, know that with you.
Yeah. I mean, they're the same. Look, I love the fact that to start the year, we were talking about the FBI. None of those clowns involved with the FBI even got anywhere. I'm so happy about that. And two guys that coach and teach and have culture, Michigan has the same thing. They've got what their program stands for all over the place and has nothing to do with shots or shots taken or makes or misses, has to do with how you conduct yourself. And I think they're incredibly similar. I hope that more coaches pay attention to guys like that instead of the Andy Einfelds. I'm going to go hire the dad of a player and all that kind of garbage that we've seen in college basketball. Let me say this. To me, it really is how most coaches go about their business. They teach, they
totally
coach,
agree.
They try to recruit to their culture. We get in so much crap about I put out a thing yesterday, two very clean programs, and people don't believe they're clean. I'm like, well, I'm not even going to argue with you. I am not arguing with you even a little bit that these guys are clean, because you can't, because people think everybody in the NCAA is filthy, and it's just not true. It's just not true. And the vast, vast, vast majority conduct themselves like John and Jay. But John and Jay take it to another level because of the universities they're at, the way they connect with their university, the way they recruit to that university, the way they recruit to their culture, the way they're able to go into families' homes and get the players that they feel they need that fit on the court as well. So, yeah. I just get tired, Seth, and it's a little bit of a soapbox. I just get tired of everybody telling me how nobody's really clean. I'm like, shut up. Just shut up. Now, I don't know how you did, but when this whole FBI thing came out to start the year, I had so many coaches texting me, please keep hitting on the fact that most of us, if not 90% of us, are clean. And I think it was a great representation of the sport last night. All right, let me go with you. All I ever hear is the negative crap about college basketball, and we've got, if you have to throw a committee together, you better get Condoleezza Rice on it. Okay. Well, I went last night, and I watched two teams that represent great universities. I watched fan bases pack the place. I watched 60,000 people in a gym at the conclusion of an unbelievable tournament. Now, I get that we turn on ESPN, you know, guys are complaining about whatever we complain about, but damn is college basketball fun. Damn is college basketball good to watch. And sometimes I get, you know, I get tired of all the complaining, and it hit me last night watching the game, or walking to the game, actually. My wife and I walked to the game, and we're like, this is a blast. Like, I don't care about one and done. I don't care about a fifth-year transfer. I don't care, you know, that guys in suits make TV personalities mad. I don't care. This is great. Awesome. Awesome, baby.
I agree with you. And, I, you know, on top of that, now think about this. Before the tournament, my guy, and I love him to death, my guy Jay Will came up with, you know, maybe the players should boycott. Maybe play. Now, I got a question. And I love him to death, and I think it was just in theory, just, you know, as an intention getter, maybe boycott the shoot, you know, the day before public practice. I, you know, again, I don't know, and I don't condemn him. He's not here to defend himself. But let me ask you this. Those kids on that court yesterday, walking out of that tunnel, walking into that arena, playing on that stage, winners and losers, obviously the winners even especially, that experience, what value do you put on that experience? And not even where they are today, but think about that lifetime experience. And, I mean, how many people get a chance to say that they experienced that? And you know what? There will be a residual effect down the road for all those kids that participated in that. It might be a job interview. It might be an endorsement. It might be who knows what it could be. But, you know, I kind of – it's a head-scratcher to me. We're thinking, yeah, who's going to walk away from that opportunity, that stage, that experience? I mean, that's a lifetime experience. And you're going to say, well, I'm going to take a stand. And I understand change. Sometimes you got to take a stand. But you know what? There are different ways to accomplish different things. And last night was just it was you're right. College basketball is in a good place. Can we get better? Sure. Everyone in any endeavor in any walk of life can get better. But I'll tell you one thing. Right now, college basketball, it's in a pretty good place. And we just saw a tournament and a season that opened with chaos and closed with probably as good a team as we've seen in a long time that reflects so positively on our sport and, you know, all the people that are involved in it.
Hey, Seth, I would love to have been a college kid in a meeting on the team, and here comes Jalen Rose or whatever. Hey, we're going to boycott because I can't sell my likeness to a car dealership. I think I would have thrown him through a window. Be like, are you out of your mind? Like, really? Because, you know, you guys, hey, you boycott. Not a chance in hell. And everything is in dollars and cents. And that's what frustrates. Everything you hear is dollars and cents. Hell, money, this, my. Hey, look, that's great. I'm with you, man. I am with you on that. But I have my father passed away 4 years ago, incredibly suddenly, just whap, dropped dead he was waiting for me to come meet him for lunch, he and my mother. And it changed my perspective on it because experiences, you got to make money, you got to get what's fair, and that's cool. But experiences and all that kind of stuff means so much. And I don't care. You may make a ton of money, and all you got to do is walk. The one thing about the Final Four that I learned is everybody wants to talk about themselves. Like, you talk to a coach, he wants to tell you about his team. You talk to a former player, they want to talk about their you know, years playing. And, you know what, that's cool. And when you're this age, man, playing in that tournament, having a game in that tournament, two games in that tournament, championship run, is something that when all the money's spent and you're laying there, that's what you're going to remember. So I know it can get shot down. I know our colleagues can shoot what I just said down, and I really don't care. Because I'm so tired of listening to money, this, everybody. And nobody's getting screwed in this. Nobody. Nobody's getting screwed in this. Now, could there be more? Sure, but nobody's getting screwed. So anyway, to hell with it. I absolutely love what those kids got to experience last night. And congratulations to every kid that played in that damn tournament, because I'm telling you, they're going to remember it for a life. I don't remember playing against Purdue. People always ask me, you remember playing Purdue? I have some. I remember beating Richmond with Johnny Newman in the NCAA tournament. I remember playing against a kid named Chipper Harris, who led the country in steals at Robert Morris in the first round of the NCAA tournament. My first NCAA tournament game as a freshman.
Cornapolis, Pennsylvania. Robert Morris. Bobby Morris.
Yeah, I get so tired of all the money, money, money. We need more money. We need more money. Shut up. Hey, if you guys wanted a boycott, then you should have boycotted when it was your turn to go to national championship, not when it's these kids' turn.
And, you know, you talk about me. Post-game press conference. The Villanova kids, not one kid. Now, I listened carefully. Not one kid talked about himself. Every single one of those kids on that day has talked about Villanova basketball and someone else, which I thought was cool. But you know what? That's just the way it is. So you know what? We're going to continue this conversation on the NCAA championship, Villanova and Michigan. But first, let's get a message from our good friends at the Google Cloud. It's March, and that means one thing. Basketball, basketball, basketball. Did you know that college players who wear the number one on their jerseys dunk the most? Or those born in North Dakota are historically the most accurate from the three-point line? You know how I know that? Because the NCAA is using Google Cloud to turn decades of data into answers. Answer questions like this. Are seniors the best at hitting game-winning shots? Can school spirit really help a team win? I don't think so. Are upsets more likely during the full moon? Well, it depends on who you're playing under your full moon. Whatever questions you have, from basketball to business, Google Cloud can help you find answers in your data. Because with all the data you're sitting on, that's how you take on the competition today, tomorrow, and well into the future. Only one team a year gets to cut down the nets, and that was Villanova. But with Google Cloud, just imagine all the things you can learn and can accomplish. Know what your data knows. Visit g.co/marchmadness to learn more about Google Cloud, the official cloud of the NCAA. Dan, all right, so Villanova wins the national championship. Jay Wright, second in 3 years. I said a week ago that Villanova, for the millennials, was a blue blood program. No doubt about it. Winning 2 and 3. Obviously, Jay Wright's now a Hall of Fame coach. There's no doubt about it. As soon as he's nominated, he'll be first ballot Hall of Fame coach. Winning 2 of 3. Can we just say, Villanova, you're a blue blood. Forget about the millennials. Take it away. And the last, since the tournament's been expanded, Duke, Kentucky, Carolina, Villanova, multiple championships. Are they a blue blood?
I think so. I mean, hell, you know, they had a vacated Final Four appearance in the early 70s with Howard Porter and that crew. So, Seth, to me, you raised a bunch of eyebrows on my radio show when you said that Indiana wasn't, and all the little blogger boys got mad at you. But you gotta look, if you want to go the history of college basketball, then all you gotta do is say UCLA. UCLA, yeah. You know, Duke. But if you're gonna talk about recent history, you have to mention Villanova. I would have thought that Connecticut won 3 in that time too.
No. Connecticut's in there also. That's my, you know, yeah. What? Before people lose their mind, thank you for saving me, and Connecticut.
Yeah, I mean,
now go ahead.
Let's be honest. I mean, when I always do this, Seth, people want to talk about, let's just take Indiana, okay? Indiana hasn't won one from 1987. All right, 1987 to now is what, 38 years? Is that what, it, you know, no, it's not. It's 30, yeah. 31 years, all right? Mm-hmm. I go back to this. I started college in 1981. If you go back 31 years, that's 1950. I didn't care what happened in 1950. It didn't even register to me what happened when I was 18 years old in 1950. So there's not a chance in hell any of these kids consider an Indiana. Like Kansas, I would say, is a blue blood because, you know what, I know they haven't won national championship, but man, 14 in a row is pretty damn good. You can almost make the argument that Gonzaga moves past in Indiana and even a UCLA in terms of recent times. I mean, although UCLA won one in the 90s.
UCLA had those three Final Fours under Ben Howard in a row.
But back to Villanova, Seth, when you really look at college sports and college in general, we have on every big – I'm just going to use the Big Ten. You have these mega campuses, right? You have these – like, man, I go to my alma mater, Indiana. I don't even recognize the Kelly School of Business is now – well, here's Villanova with 12,000 students. I know they've done a lot for their basketball program. They just go in and whip everybody 2 out of 3 years. I mean – that's another part that makes college basketball fun to me. Villanova has a great FBS football program. If they went to Division I, they'd have no chance. No chance against Florida, against UCLA. All right, or excuse me, against Ohio State and Alabama. But in basketball, here you go. And again, right guy coaching the team, right mannerisms in terms of the history, understanding it, right guy for the right city. Hey, it's an amazing story, and if you can name me a better basketball program, a better run basketball program than Villanova, I want to hear who it is, because I don't believe it. You're not going to see one damn thing here with the FBI or the NCAA about Jay Wright, and they win a ton. No, Blue Blood, you can't even compare. My alma mater, it hurts me to say it, I was there 17 years. Indiana and Villanova is not even close.
I'm going to give you another one now. All right, so you have these two national championships in 3 years. All right, the hardest thing to do is build a program and build a culture. The next hardest thing to do in the culture of college basketball today is to maintain it. Because, I mean, if you look at this Villanova team now, Jalen Brunson graduated already, 3 years, he's gone. Mikal Bridges is allegedly a lottery pick. He's gone. Omari Spellman is a redshirt freshman. The way he played at the end of the season, he could be gone. Dante DiVincenzo, the first question he had to answer on the dais yesterday as well. After this game, does it change your outlook on what you're going to do next year? Are you going to put your name in the draft? He could be gone. So as good as Villanova is, and there's going to be maintaining in the culture of college basketball today, maintaining your program, keeping momentum. We saw it with Florida, back-to-back national championships. Yeah, they were good a couple of years after that. But Billy Donovan's last year, not very good. The first year of Mike White, the residual effect of Billy's last year, not very good. Hard to maintain a program when you lose that many players that quickly, that early. Villanova will recruit. I mean, let's face it. Jay Wright will get in any living room in America. Now, he's got to get in the right living rooms. What I mean by that, guys are going to buy into his culture, buy into what they're doing. But how hard will it be for them to be an NCAA tournament team if you lose those four guys next year? How hard will it be for them to get back where they were in the culture of college basketball? Like Lonnie Walker was from Reading, PA, right up the street. He chose Miami. Now, you know what? He might have ruined the culture. Not ruined it, but he might not have fit in it at Villanova. But I know they recruited him hard. It's not like Jay Wright doesn't recruit one-and-done guys. But because his guys stay, although when they get to the league, they stay in the league. Josh Hart's having a good year. Kyle Lowry, Randy Foy. I mean, they're almost like guard you in a lot of ways, like Miami back in the day was quarterback you. Now you got Jalen Brunson. You got to see what's happening with DiVincenzo and Mikal Bridges. Those guys all develop. People actually use that against them. Well, your guys stay 3 years. Yeah. They all stay 3 years. Yeah. They get better. Like, that's a curse. Oh, my God, they stay 3 years. What's wrong with those guys? Well, you know, when they get in the league, they're ready to play and they're ready to contribute, and they're not going to be bouncing in the G League. How hard do you think it'll be for them to maintain it?
You know, I don't know. I don't, because I believe in them. But I also believe in players. Seth, I don't know. I think DiVincenzo would probably be, you know, I got to figure Bridges is gone, and I got to figure that Brunson's gone. The other guy, Spellman, I don't. I assume he'll go to the draft, check it out, and come back. I assume DiVincenzo will be somebody that has to make a real decision. Seth, I believe in what they do. I believe, you know, and I think it's silly not to. But I also know they got a hell of a league. I know they've got aspirations, and you said it. There's different types of momentum. You know, the momentum sometimes in a mid-major league is, hey, we got momentum, man. We just won our league. We went to the NCAA tournament. Their type of momentum, you know, they, again, if you're going to be a blue blood, you perform to that level. We're talking about Elite Eight, Sweet 16, that kind of thing every year. I mean, we, you know, we get mad at Duke for losing a game, and, you know, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. Well, it was an Elite Eight game, which is tough to win. So, Seth, I don't know, but I do think their success at the level that they have been at depends on whether Spellman and DiVincenzo come back. If those two guys come back,
forget it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They're right back at it.
And I say to you, Seth, like,
Booth is coming back.
I'm not 100% convinced. Like, even that Spellman, I'm not one of those that says a kid should come back another year to develop, because you can develop in the NBA. Hell, you play basketball all day long. Yeah. I'm just not convinced that his draft position would be where he would want it, or where it would be worth it, based on where it could be in a year or two when he gets a post-up game. You know, when he just, you know, gets his body and his draft position will be better. I saw a draft thing today that said Kata Bates-Diop's a second rounder. I'm thinking to myself, my God, Brunson's a second rounder I'm seeing. I'm like, jeez, are you crazy? I mean, how good do you have to be? So, and I know they draft on potential. So, Seth, I those two come back, we're in business. Those two don't come back, they're probably damn good, hell. You know, I mean, you go back against Villanova.
It's hard to. How about Colin Gillespie comes off the bench? I mean, Brunson sits for like 6 or 7 minutes. He went all Ryan Arcidiacono on us.
Right.
I mean, like,
that's what I'm saying.
Colin getting an offense, making a pass, knocked down a three. I mean, it was a junior. I mean, it was hilarious.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
Seth.
Just always something. I mean, the one thing that always doesn't scare me. It's not my team, although I want to see Jay do well, is that, you know, momentum is hard. And I think the challenge for them is going to be, all right, if you're a good player, Villanova's going to be in your living room. If you're a good player, all right, Villanova's going to be on your list. I think that now the challenge for Villanova moving forward is getting the right guys, not just collecting talent.
Well, can I say something about that?
And that's where the culture comes in.
Well, I think not only the culture comes in, Seth, but I think a mature adult as a head coach. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, not a guy trying to win, you know, some recruiting guru's favor, or, you know, become a top 10 recruit, 5 recruiting. Just, and that's where you asked me earlier about Beilein and Jay Wright and similarities. That's how I think. They're just mature adult head coaches that know what they want, see what they want, know how it fits, and then go after that kid. And that's why I think, Seth, I don't really, maybe, and you said it correct, Jay already did that, right? Jay already kind of gave in to talent, and it didn't work. So now you had a mature adult head coach that struggled at one point after success, and it really is the same thing. Hey, Jay, Seth, I don't know if you know this, but I mean, we're talking about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, before that run in the Big Ten tournament after the plane crash, people were talking about firing Beilein. A mature adult head coach will come through it well, and I believe in both of them. I'm sorry to hog the mic there.
Oh, no, I'm with you 100%. I'm with you 100%. I'll tell you one thing. It's going to be interesting, you know, kind of closing up. By the way, we're going to have podcasts throughout the summer when news breaks, or even just when Dan and I just want to talk some ball, solve the world's problems, stay undefeated, and kind of basically do what we do. But it will be interesting because, you know, Duke's got another great recruiting class, and Kentucky's going to end up with another great recruiting class. Kansas had, you know, a bunch of guys sitting out, and they have a absolute monster recruiting class. So those guys aren't going to change. And, I think the big thing will be, you know, as we close this thing up, all right, we talk about who's the next Gonzaga. Every mid-major goes, who's going to be the next Gonzaga? You know, obviously, Gonzaga is a high major playing in a mid-major league that runs its program like, you know, a Power 5. But still, I mean, every mid-major AD wants to be, why can't we be Gonzaga? You know, it used to be, why can't we be Butler? Well, you know what? Invest in your program. in a similar way that those schools invest in their program, and then you can try to be those people because your investment's got to equal your expectation. But now, I think there are going to be a bunch of ADs running around. Tell me if I'm wrong here going, why can't we be Villanova? Why can't we get old, stay old? Why can't we recruit these high-character guys? Why can't we develop players? Why can't we, you look at those guys and, you know, they could be on our campus. Why aren't we recruiting those guys? Don't you think that's going to happen now in every administrative third floor AD's council meeting in America?
I think two things. I think that and a lot of mid-major coaches are in trouble. Hey, why is Loyola able to do it? You know what I mean? Like, yep. Loyola, they didn't even, like you said, I think you said it in our last podcast, right? Didn't have a sellout or maybe one sellout, really lost a bunch
one
of games.
I mean, one sellout.
Yeah, like, why can't we, Seth, I if I'm an athlete, I always say I'd be a bad athletic director because I don't want nonsense and I want you to win. I don't want any nonsense. I don't want any stupidity and I want you to have guys that represent, so go out and recruit that. And you'll win. You know, staying old is magical if you get the right guys. All right, let me, Seth, my answer is yes. Those questions will be happening. Do you think there's two distinct ways of recruiting now in college basketball? At the highest level, okay? There's three, but the two that win, all right, the one and done, you're going to win. You get Bagley and you get Carter, you know, okay, fine. But also saying, wait a second. And I'm gonna use a certain skill in this. You got a, let's just take a star system. You got a 3-star player who can really shoot it and is going to develop and works hard, loves the game. Or you got a 4 or 5, whatever, star player who, you know, is really athletic, drives it. Not sure how much he loves the game. I think coaches now are starting to go, wait a second, shooting is the great elixir in this thing. And if you can shoot it, dribble it a little bit, I want to take you if you're coachable over a guy that maybe is just a crazy athlete. Am I wrong about that?
You're 100% right. I think that college basketball, you've got to be able to make shots and you've got to have skill and you've got to have a stretch four that can make a play and put pressure on the defense. And the more skilled guys you have, the better off you are. And I think that's what we're going to be talking about moving forward. And Dan and I would like to thank Google Cloud. I remind listeners to rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts or wherever they listen to the show. D Squared, what a year. What a year. It doesn't get any better. Full year of hoops, courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, Tito's and Nachos on the Riverwalk. Next year, we'll be freezing our rear ends off in Minneapolis. But you know what? The games will be great. The games will be great.
They will.
Once again, we'd like to thank everyone for listening. And stay tuned because there's going to be a lot more good stuff coming from the two world's greatest podcasts, no doubt about it, on any sport, on anything, and two of the greatest fired coaches in the history of the game.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.